All right, make sure you're in fellowship as we are here looking at Yahweh's second audible delivered to Abraham after Abraham has passed the test and provided the ram that he caught in the thicket in sacrifice and worship of God for all concerned revolving around the test. And in this particular narrative, Yahweh addresses the covenant once again in its most expansive form and in its most forceful way of promise by swearing an oath on himself. By myself I have sworn, verse 16, declares the Lord, because you have done this thing and not withheld your son, your only son. Then he addresses the blessings that are associated with the oath. And as we looked at his swearing of oath, the fact that he's God, obviously there's none other that he can appeal to higher than himself or greater than himself, as would be an oath taking otherwise. To validate or confirm his promises. And that is brought out for us in Hebrews 9, or 6, verses 9 through 20 that we dealt with. In that vein, we also saw that when one takes an oath, it shows that an issue has been resolved in regards to taking the oath. Further, it draws attention to God's attribute of immutability, is unchangefulness, his faithfulness, if you will, in regards to his promises, and the fact that God cannot lie, and therefore, obviously, what he states will indeed occur and happen, and also that it is provided as a reason of giving confidence for one who is otherwise the recipient of the oath here for the believer, as it would relate to God's veracity in fulfilling his promises in that respect. Those are verses there in Hebrews, specifically 16 through 18 in that vein. So picking up here, point 13, page 20 of our notes, that Yahweh evokes the oath here immediately after Abraham's test. It implies that up to that point, one issue remained unresolved in anticipation of God's fulfillment of covenant promise, a blessing for Abraham's posterity. So, up to that point, something remained unfulfilled or unresolved for God to come in and then swear an oath. These promises that are related to the covenant. And that issue is point 14. That issue was an absolute validation in time of Abraham's phase 2 positive volition in obedience to God. And obviously this test that he underwent proved that beyond a shadow of a doubt, that he was willing to go the course and actually kill his son Isaac, obviously resting on the doctrine of resurrection, otherwise that God would resolve the situation in and of himself for him to fulfill his own promises regarding Isaac. He was at the point of ready to slit his son's throat, and God, as we saw, put a stop to that test because that's all that was necessary for him to pass this test, to show his allegiance and obedience to God, putting God first, Bible doctrine first in his life over and beyond. The other aspect of the test, as we stated at the beginning of first class, was impossible for, if you will, Abraham to fulfill theologically. Because the sacrifice obviously represents atonement of sins and propitiation of God's righteousness and justice. All Abraham could do was be obedient to Bible doctrine on his part. And that's all that God required for him. The rest of it demanded a substitute. And the rest of it is fulfilled through the person of Jesus Christ. So he had the test. He comes to the point. Obviously, God doesn't give him a test that's impossible for him to pass. And when he gets to the point where it comes to propitiating God's righteousness completely in disrespect in terms of sacrifice, he has to stop the test and provide the substitute, which he did through the ram, which is symbolic of the person of Jesus Christ. So up to that point in time, obviously, what's recorded in regard to Abraham, even though we see obedience, we see terms of blessing, the covenant, etc., etc., was there an absolute way to prove his commitment to God? This was a test that proved that in that respect. So that was an unresolved issue remaining for God to now expand his promises to the degree that we see here in these verses. So, point 13 again, that Yahweh evokes the oath immediately after Abraham's test implies that up to that point, one issue remained unresolved in anticipation of God's fulfillment of covenant promise, a blessing for Abraham's posterity. 14, that issue was an absolute validation, proof, in time of Abraham's phase 2 postulation and obedience to God to receive maximum blessing. Obviously, obedience had to go beyond saving faith to phase 2 faith, an application of God's plan. So 15, only then did he prove that God's choice of him to be the recipient of the covenant was based on postulation both phase 1 and phase 2. The security of promise of descendants and real estate was based simply on phase 1 faith, even though obviously it pictured phase 2 faith, as we saw in regards to the rituals, etc., etc., that are tied into it. Now, through this application, Abraham has stepped up to the plate and proved why and gives reason why God chose him in time to be the recipient of the covenant, and that was he was not only positive saving faith, but he was also positive phase two, in a on a level of commitment that would obviously take him to the end. So 16, this is understood now in the cause, his phase 2 faith. This is understood in the cause behind the oath taking. Quote, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, end quote. 17, Abraham passing the super test imposed upon him, in a test that none of us will ever be given a directive to apply at this level. He passed the super test imposed upon him, point 17, revealed his absolute priority to God and Bible doctrine. I mean, if you're willing to kill your own kid in obedience to Bible doctrine, I mean, what more proof do you want? Obviously, he's still putting doctrine together with doctrine. So 18, his application then evokes God to swear on himself, both in reaffirmation as to his immutability and veracity, and then maximizing the blessing clauses in terms of the covenant. 19, Abraham has evidenced his allegiance to God, and Yahweh declares that the promise of covenant blessing over and beyond his basic precepts is now a done deal. You got to understand, God makes promises. These promises are going to be fulfilled. But not until the person comes in and makes the application is the fulfillment realized based on that person, see. And the covenant rests on Abraham's willingness to apply Bible doctrine and be in positive phase 1 and phase 2 in this respect. And after Abraham applied at this level, at such a degree of intensity. He has now provided the evidence and the proof that he is of the quality of positive volition, that God can come in now and declare blessings that go beyond just what one might expect in time, in blessing, etc. But beyond that, this is now a done deal because Abraham has applied the doctrine at hand. It's like the idea, if you don't make application, there's no SG3. The SG3 is promised. You get in fellowship, you apply Bible doctrine, you're going to get SG3. But until you do that, it's not a done deal. See? So God is invoked here to swear on himself, both in reaffirmation as to his immutability, his unchangefulness, his faithfulness, and veracity, he doesn't lie, and maximizing now the blessing clauses in terms of the covenant. So 19, Abraham has evidenced his allegiance to God and Yahweh. Allegiance to God and Yahweh declares that the promise of the covenant blessing, over and beyond his basic precepts, is a done deal to what we have up to this point in time, even though they've been alluded to otherwise. 20, because of Abraham's phase 2 positive volition, those associated with him in likeness are completely assured of blessing by association. He sets the standards. We are blessed by association with Abraham, no matter who you are. See? Because of his positive volition, his faithfulness, those down the line, in the future, in history, are blessed by association. Just as your positive volition, your witness of the life, etc., as it may be extended to others around you, or to others down the future that may hear of you or what you have done otherwise, would be blessed by association. We're blessed by association all over the place. All the writers of Scripture, we're blessed by association with them because of their positive volition. As positive volition is like a magnet towards each other throughout history. It produces, manufactures a line, a conduit, straight to God, of which everyone that taps into that, obviously, is blessed by association with all the others who are positive also in time. And obviously there's one that provides the power for all that to occur. And we know who that is. And it's brought out here in these analyses. So because Abraham's faithful, a covenant was able to be administered, that through his line, the promised seed, the promised heir, and all the blessings associated revolving around that, basically is a done deal because of the faithfulness of those before us applying Bible doctrine. 21, he has showed the qualification necessary for the plan of God to be realized in terms of maximum blessing. That is an example of his phase 2 positive volition. He realized there are normal blessings in time, in life, in regards to salvation. Then there's over and beyond blessings. Normal blessings comes about through saving faith. Faith apart from works. That we all are guaranteed a resurrection body. A place in God's kingdom. And no more death, all the other things that come with a resurrection body. No more pain, sorrow. No more getting old. No more getting cranky. You don't have no more STA. You know, all these things. Those are normal blessings. All believers will experience that and enjoy that. But then there's over and beyond blessings. And those are blessings that are only reserved for those who then go beyond saving faith and apply faith towards Bible doctrine or phase 2 in their Christian experience according to divine design, being in fellowship and following the the divine directives given to us as believers in our place in history, in time, in this respect, in our witness. And that's called SG3, Surpassing Grace, Phase 3. And the Bible is replete in regards to this doctrine. And Christ, who inherits all things, is sharing that inheritance with those who will line up and imitate Him in time in regards to obeying God, the Father, and His plan for their lives. He says He brings His reward with Him. He'll be there waiting for us when the bema seat occurs in this respect. It's not anything that we can describe and explain to you beyond a certain level because it's impossible, the magnitude of it. All we can tell you that is eternal. It never fades in regards to His glory, His pristine nature, the newness of it. It's obviously associated with what we will be in regards to our resurrection bodies. And apart from other terms such as ruling with Christ in regards to getting the prize and things of this nature, it's impossible otherwise to explain it. So truly we live a life by faith in regards to certain doctrines especially, such as SG3 in this vein. So Abraham shows he has the qualification necessary for the plan of God now to be realized in terms of maximum blessing. It extends from simply blessing in time to phase 3 blessing. Phase 2, positive volition. 22, Abraham's obedience from this initial call in Genesis 12 to this final reiteration of the promises has with it the element of conditionality. As we've seen it, as he progressed, as he made these applications, then the covenant was confirmed, reconfirmed, expanded upon, etc. Separation from Lot, real estate yours. It's a done deal. Do this, I promise you, you're going to get this. Now, God obviously in eternity past knew He was going to do all this. But it's being communicated to, so we can understand and appreciate it in regards to our own lives and application of it. And after after God killed his dad, he got out underneath that thumb, and he went to the land, and finally separated from Lot, which it shows the application separation can be tough, and sometimes God has to intercede on behalf of the individuals for it to occur. It's not the preferred way to do it. You want to see somebody get killed because they're going to be a stumbling block to you spiritually? Well, that's not ain't fun. You know, things of that nature. Then in regards to faith and belief, in regards to the promised heir coming to recognition, in regards to is going to come from Sarah, all this, Abraham evolved spiritually over time as he matured. And these promises became more prominent, became more expressive and more expansive, because he was applying in a conditional way. And after he applied to under certain conditions, then, as we saw, the covenant became unconditional. So Abraham's obedience from his initial call, point 22 in Genesis 12, to this final reiteration of the promises has with it the element of conditionality. Even though the covenant itself is unconditional because of phase one faith. But we've been through all that. 23, of course, God foreknew that Abraham would be obedient or he wouldn't have chosen. Another reason why he put things in God's hands. God knows, see. Why you just don't go out under energy of the flesh and pursue things in life. And rather, you look to God to give you direction and guidance, and be prayerful about it. God knows, see. And God knew in eternity past that Abraham was going to pass this test. He's going to manifest the kind of volition that was worthy of being named the first Jew of human history. Obviously, his obedience regards to circumcision That was implication of phase two obedience too. But it also emphasized phase one faith, isolation of the STA. See. Through saving faith. But anyway. 24, it was his obedience that made it possible for God to establish this unconditional covenant with this believer. So it goes from conditional to unconditional. And now it reverts back, if you will, to conditional again. Well, where is that? How's that come into play? It looks to SG3. Looks to that over and beyond in that respect. 25, because he did the right thing, the covenant is made secure for time immemorial. Time everlasting. 26, the cause and effect relationship is clearly noted here in these verses. The cause, as we see, is obedience. The effect is blessing. Cause is obedience. The effect is blessing. You want to be blessed by God? Well, first you've got to be obedient. See. 27, there would have been no covenant had Abraham proved himself disobedient at crucial moments in his life. Certain tests, certain aspects, certain priorities in life. You just can't let slide and go by the wayside. Understand that? We talk about priorities of doctrine. And obviously, the priority here that we've seen in this test is that doctrine, God, comes first in everything. Before family, before life itself. See? If you want to achieve and be included in the company of the likes of Abraham. And it's not impossible to do. Now, we have our own set of tests. God designs His own test specific to our niche. It's a matter of living our life, oriented to our niche, acclimating to it, and being obedient to God. See, under the role imperatives for us. So, there's definitely a cause and effect in the relationship here because you have not withheld your son, your only son, because you have obeyed my voice. The effect? Blessing, 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 blessing. Beyond your imagination. Beyond anything that you can comprehend almost. So there would have been an old covenant or another target for covenant. Not that God's plan would have failed, but it's amazing how there is that right position at any given point in time in history. That's a mind blower in and of itself. But, you know, God has it all worked out. There would have been no covenant had Abraham proved himself disobedient at crucial moments in his life. 28, we might say, if you don't make maturity adjustment, you don't go to the end, there's no prize, see, even though the promise might be there for those otherwise. So 28, now we might safely assume here that Isaac was still present, even though he's not mentioned in this. But he's still got to be around there. So, you know, after the sacrifice and the burning of the ram, was he over there? Hey, Dad, would you mind uncutting me here? Would you let me out of these ropes, huh? No, he's there. Abraham let him loose. He's assisted, but he remains silent throughout all this. In regards to the narrative, and we'll deal with that in our next verse. But anyway, but we can safely assume that he was there. He heard Yahweh speak, and that brings in the other aspect. We've dealt with resolving an issue. We dealt with God's immutability and His promise. It's a done deal. Now being an encouragement for others to hang in there to the end. So now it becomes an encouragement, obviously not only to Abraham, but to Isaac as Abraham's descendant, as a promise there, as it passes down the link in regards to positive volition in the line of Christ. So we might safely assume that Isaac was still present and also heard Yahweh's words as example and encouragement for his own positive volition. That's point 28. 29. Now the promise of blessing and multiplication factors of descendants here is described in the most extensive language yet. Literally, blessing I will bless you, and multiplying I will multiply your seed as the stars of the heavens and as the sand which is on the seashore. 30. The familiar use now of the infinitive and imperfect Hebrew structure and the double use of the verbs barak, barak, and ravah, ravah, blessing and multiplying, highlights both physical and spiritual realities. Once again, we can see the duplicity intended in the maximization greatly. Obviously understood. So, blessing, I will bless you. Multiplying, I will multiply your seed. Highlights both physical and spiritual realities. 31, the blessing is to be viewed in terms of blessing in time and SG3. 32, the abundance or progeny is to be viewed here in terms of racial and spiritual descendants. Multiply and I will multiply. 33, the terms are designed here, obviously, to include both Israel and the church. Again, we've already addressed this and the promises that these things were embedded otherwise. But here, it's made more specific by the language itself, the duplicity of the language. So, racial and spiritual descendants for Israel, Psalm 105, verse 6. O seed of Abraham, his servant, O sons of Jacob, his chosen ones. It's none other than Israel himself. A seed of Abraham, Zerah, our term. And then on a spiritual level, and there are those spiritually that also have racial descendancy. You got to understand that you can be a Jew racially, as your DNA. You can be a Jew spiritually. That's your spiritual condition. You can be both. Be a racial and spiritual Jew. The church is designated as being an offspring of Abraham spiritually. And that's taught for us by Paul in Romans 4:11. Regarding Abraham and circumcision and argument against the Judaizers that want to add works to faith for salvation, phase one. His faith was recognized as righteousness before he was circumcised. So circumcision isn't part of that. And verse 11, and received, we dealt with this when we dealt with the ritual circumcision in Genesis, and received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith which he had while uncircumcised, that he might be the father of all who believe without being circumcised. That includes Gentiles. That would be the church. That righteousness might be reckoned to them. So, consistently, we see the Bible related to, on physical and spiritual terms, paralleling one another. So we can have a better understanding of spiritual realities. Verse 12. And the father of circumcision to those who not only are the circumcision, that is, Jews, racial Hebrews, but who also follow in the steps of the faith of our father Abraham, which he had while uncircumcised, faith in Messiah, no matter what you are racially. In verse 16, for this reason is by faith that it might be in accordance with grace, in order that the promise may be certain to all the descendants, not only to those who are of the law, the Mosaic law of the Jews, but also those who are of the faith of Abraham, who's the father of us all, spiritually and racially, whether you're a racial Jew or a spiritual Jew. As it is written, the father of many nations I have made you. Quote from Genesis 17. In verse, in the sight of him who believed, even God, who gives life to death and calls into being that which does not exist. Verse 18, in hope against hope, he believed, in order that he might become a father of many nations, according to that which has been spoken, so shall your descendants be. And that obviously emphasizes phase one faith in the passage, but it relates and makes clear of spiritual, being a spiritual Jew is by faith, not by a racial descendancy. Galatians 3:7. Therefore, be sure that it is those who are of faith who are sons of Abraham. Jesus himself recognized the same principle. The Jews, the Pharisees, tried to claim Abraham as their father. Well, racially, you may be, but otherwise, spiritually, you're your father, the devil. And they just loved him for that. He was just such a nice individual. That's the fundy. Jesus would never say anything like that. He wouldn't vibrate somebody like that. The hell he wouldn't. 34, already, now back to our context. Already we have seen the descendants described as many as the stars, kokav in the Hebrew. That was back in chapter 15, in that particular scenario, when he's visiting, trying to build up his faith with doctrine in regards to the promised heir. We read that earlier. Look towards the heavens and count the stars, if you're able to count them. And he said, then, so your descendants will be. 35. Now, this is the first time that they have been enumerated, numbered, as sand on the seashore. That's Kol Ha Shefa Yam. Sand upon the edge of the sea. Sand on the seashore. 36, looking at this, both stars and sand together equal the description of descendants otherwise previously defined as the, quote, dust of the earth. Sand on the seashore is limited. Stars, he said, if you can count, there's obviously more or less a possibility, even though obviously it's going to be real tough. But when it comes down to the dust of the earth, how many, you know, pieces of dust is there on the earth? So together, stars and sand would equal the description of the dust of the earth that he referred to back in 13, verse 16. I'll make your descendants as the dust of the earth. Obviously, it's not going to be that many unless you're looking into the future, like eternal future. People still reproducing in the eternal state under the doctrine of the eternal state that we've dealt with. Only church age Old Testament saints will receive resurrection bodies. There is no mention of resurrection for millennial saints because they go into the eternal state in their natural bodies, which is possible for God, and they continue to reproduce. The leaves of the tree of life are designed to eradicate the sin nature and provide us a perfect environment, and they continue to produce. Imagine this going on for eternity. The dust of the earth is not now beyond scope of the imagination, is it? No. So, anyway, I like to think about things like that. Makes me feel really stupid, but I like to think about it anyway. You could just kind of think about God and how far out of reach His thoughts are. See? All right. I'll quit emoting over that. Both stars and sand, point 36, together equal the description of the descendants as the, quote, dust of the earth, end quote. 37, all these terms draw attention to the vast number, obviously, of humans that are involved in a general sense. There's a bunch of them. We can say that. It's a bunch of them. 38, further, throughout the verses, the term seed, zera here, as a collective singular, refers to all of Abraham's descendants, both believers, stars, and here, sand, I'm interpreting to be unbelievers. It's used in that vein, Revelation 20, verse 8. It could refer simply to just racial Jews, but more specifically, I believe, contextually.